It's the Max Show. Yes, we're off and running. We're a tad late. Not too bad. We haven't beaten our record, it has to be said. But joining me to discuss the week in Apple, we've got a great panel this week. Fantastic one. Top left, Mr. Madden. How the devil are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. You had a week off, haven't you?
I've been slumming it the entire week. And my damn pad still didn't turn up miles away, which is most upsetting. But
so
there you go.
You're still waiting on the iPad Retina, which is now Monday, apparently, isn't it?
So it says.
Oh, lovely. And then how long's the wait for your MacBook Pro?
MacBook Pro says 30th of December.
30th?
30th of December, only because it went from when I upped the RAM from 8 gig to 16 gig, it went from 3 to 5 days to 4 to 6 weeks. So I thought, oh, okay.
They're not that low on RAM, surely.
Well, apparently they must be. Funny thing is, if you do it for the 15-inch model, that stays the same shipping date if you up the RAM on that. But for 13-inch, it jumps to that massive amount. It was weird. That's but I thought, since you can't change it up, you know, post-ordering, I'll stick with the 16 and swallow the delay.
Well, it'll be worth it when it gets there. Santa will have been and Santa will come again. Ho, ho, ho. Won't there be fun? Oh. Making his monthly appearance for us, Mr. Anatko, how the devil are you? I haven't seen you in about 8 months.
I know, because you weren't here the last time and I wasn't here the previous time before that. Mistakes were made on both sides.
How the devil are you, sir?
Moderately well. I continue to donate blood at my local Red Cross every month, chiefly to get the free blood pressure and iron level screening, and both of them are really, really good. My vision continues to be of the single variety, and so I'm going to take that as a sign that I'm still in pretty good health.
And the chat room is pointing out the stuffed squirrel on your screen. It's gone from on the screen to on the top of the screen. You didn't shoot that yourself, did you?
Is it a stuffed squirrel, or is it simply a very patient squirrel? It knows that it gets a treat if it's quiet throughout the entire podcast. Throughout the entire podcast, mind you, the entire podcast.
Okay, we shall check. I'll take a screen capture and we'll overlay them later. And last but by no means least, Gritty Boy.
Hello, chap.
How the devil are you? And how's the fly fishing coming?
Well, the book's come through the post, and I've downloaded the game, but I don't think the season kicks off until May, is it, or something like
that?
Well,
you need to get your rod out soon, mate, and practice.
I'm going to.
Show title.
Oh, man.
I got a new Mac.
You have? You've got about 12 of the buggers anyway, ain't you?
Well, I'm picking this new beauty up on Sunday.
What is it, a Newton?
Well, it's along those lines. I had a few beers, and I was looking on eBay, and I thought,
And there was a bloke outside with magic beans.
I've got me a cube. I've got a Mac cube. Mac Pro monitor.
I want one of those.
They're a thing of beauty, aren't they? Let's be honest.
I had a guy who wrote... I was saying on one of the shows, I really want a Mac, because I've got a little collection of Macs behind me here on the shelves, and I really wanted the cube to finish it off. And a guy said, oh, I've got one you can have. I said, oh, brilliant, fantastic. How do I get to arrange delivery? And he wanted £800 for it. I thought it'd piss off. But the way he said it was like, no, mate, you can have it, it's fine. Yeah, if you give me £100, bastard.
So, I think that the most undervalued Mac on the old classic Mac thing, I mean, mine was, with the monitor, £120. I'm going to have to pick it up myself, unfortunately, from South Wales. But other than that, that's a pretty good deal for like a design legend, isn't it?
It is.
I loved that. What I loved the most about it was the way that you get at the RAM and the drive, which is it is the most like 2001 A Space Odyssey thing, where you flip it upside down. There is a handle that is flush with the bottom of the hardware. You punch it in, it springs up to form of a handle, and then you pull out the entire core like pulling a cork out of a wine bottle.
And you expect it to go as you do it.
I can feel myself going, Andy.
Like a nuclear reactor.
I can feel it. My name is G4 Cube. I was built in the Cupertino manufacturing plant.
It does. No, that would
January 8th, 1994.
It's
my designer was Joni Ive. He taught me a song.
Well, there's an awful lot of crossover, though, isn't it? Because it wasn't the next computer. That was very QB, wasn't it?
I'd say, yeah.
There was an awful lot of borrowing went on there at the very best.
It looked cool as hell. Yeah, I mean, and that was another. That my ears perked up when you talked when you first said that some guy just has one and had a G4 cube in the closet. Oh, you can have it if you want, because that is like for so many people, this is just the computer that they had like four generations ago. They just haven't gotten around to throwing out yet. They know it's in the garage somewhere. They don't care if they have it or not. I got my next cube that way because somebody had a next cube because they were a university researcher. And it was an old, like, you're looking for an next cube? I got, if you want to come to my lab, like, in Cambridge, you can just have it, because it's just doing nothing. And I'm like, I could do that. Why don't I buy you a burrito, too, while I'm in Cambridge? Just to make it fair. Why don't you sign a document saying that I've sold it to you? You've sold it to me for the cost of this $8 burrito, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that was good.
I bought a church organ for 100 quid that way.
Where on earth? Your ass isn't big enough for me to stand up straight in. Where have you put a church organ?
It was mad. We had it. I bought it about 10 years ago.
Are we talking all the frigging pipes? You know that?
No. Well, to be fair, a harmonium. But it was church harmonium. It was a big bastard. It took up literally half the lounge, and it had a little handle that you had to get a choir boy to pump. And
oh man, social services.
But it was great because for that one Christmas when it was in the lounge, I played the piano myself, and all the neighbours and friends came round, and we played and sang Christmas carols on the Victorian organ.
And they played on your organ. Jolly good, mate. Oh, blimey.
No, don't force it. These great double entendres are just coming naturally. Don't force it.
They're coming thick and fast tonight.
And don't force it. It'll be another great show title, double entendre. It seems like the 100, so it was like 100 pounds for the church organ. How much for the huge, like, Dracula cape that you really, really had to buy once you realized that how much fun it is to be sitting at a church organ in a Phantom of the Opera cape.
With Captain Nemo's sub. Windrider in the chat room says, gut the thing and put a Mac inside it if you get a cube. And someone's put a picture of a tissue box inside it, which I think is an abomination. I find that offensive, nay. Arctic Musher. Take it down. The Week in Apple, what's been going on? Well, there has been a bit of a few sales of the iPhone 5S and 5C. They've taken up 76% of the total smartphone sales for Japan for October. So there's a few quid out there. There's Black Friday deals akimbo. Everyone thought it was just gift cards to begin with. But the iPad Air is going for 31 quid off here in the UK. And I think Costco's got it at 430 quid for the 32 gig version, which is not a bad old price. There's loads of stuff going on. And they're going to stick Siri inside some more Hondas, which Siri doesn't run on frigging Apple devices. It ain't going to run on a Honda. So we'll have to wait and see. And the straight to iTunes film, Jobs, has been released. $20 if you want to buy it. Holy crap.
Yeah. I don't know which balances it out. I only spent $10 to see it. So I spent half as much money as anybody else, but I did make time to go and see it in a theater on like opening weekend.
Well, it's kind of bypassed the UK. We haven't seen it.
Well, and for good, just like typhoid, you should be glad if I had. It would take only such a minor amount of re-editing to turn this into like one of those 20-minute like collegehumor.com or funny or die videos.
Oh no.
Because it is so over the top bad. It's like in the first 5 minutes, you have young Steve Jobs lying like face up in a field of grass with his two friends, and he's tripping on acid, and he says, and this is almost an exact quote, what would convince parents to give away their only boy? And so you have this nicely wooden piece of writing matched that surface treatment matched by Ashton Kutcher's delivery. He did not find the hidden depth lurking beneath that line. Oh, goodness.
Belts in the chat room has really come up with the, or Batwinch rather, has come up with a question. Compare it, give us a as good as Pirates of Silicon Valley, better, worse, equal.
I'd say better because at least it was Pirates of Silicon Valley was definitely a made for TV sort of treatment where they're writing it for the runs they can make between commercial breaks. Also understanding that we have to dumb this. This is for a general TV audience. We have to dumb this way down. The performances in Pirates of Silicon Valley were very, very good. They managed to put together a really interesting story, and it did, even though it's based on history, but not history, but they managed to mostly stick to the truth. With the Jobs movie, there's a big, big teary showdown between Woz and Jobs, where Woz, who's painted as I retained the ideals of Apple as we founded it, and now, Steve, I don't know who you are anymore. Weepy, weepy, weepy. I have to quit Apple now because I don't like what you're doing. But the funniest part of it, though, is that you can tell. I think it's Kotke, I think, was an advisor on it, and he was like with Apple from the beginning. He left. He left as Jobs was starting to have his troubles. And you can really, really see that as soon as the one insider consultant left, wherever that person's knowledge of Apple left, like as soon as the scene in which his character quits Apple is the last scene in which we learn anything about anything that happened inside Apple. The rest of it is just, no kidding, 45 minutes of the paperwork of Steve Jobs being CEO and the rest of the board like wanting to boot him out, and the terms of his leaving, and it's, oh dear, I could have made up facts that would have been far more interesting. I've never written a screenplay, but I'm guessing that I could get a bushel basket, a bulk load of words, and simply throw it on the floor, pick them up in any semblance of order, toss in punctuation where it looks like the actor's going to need to take a breath, and had a better screenplay than this.
Have you read my blog? we'll see. I for $20.
I know we all had high hopes for this movie. As soon as we saw Ashton Kutcher, we thought, finally, the legacy that Steve Jobs' legacy is going to be set in a form where people can understand it. But oh well.
And actually, it turns out to be a poster campaign for piracy, in effect. the iPad Pro is coming. We have sources inside Apple who have sent us some information, and the word is it'll be available in 256 at the base level SSD, 12.9-inch screen. It will have an OS on it which is capable of running standard Mac App Store applications as well as iOS Touch applications. No word on processor because it's not going to be released until perhaps July to October. Information at the WWDC event for developers because of the issues of programming and so on, but maybe an October iPad period release. 64-bit architecture, which means that the unification of programming should be far easier across both platforms. Discuss.
I don't know. Was this the same source? I remember talking to you once last year, the year before, about it's done. The Apple television set.
No.
He's got numbers for it. You know for a fact now. There's no question about it.
That was Kyle, who's not on the show today. That was a lot of conjecture. But actually, this is the source that gave us the iPad Mini in January 2012. And it turned out to be pretty close to everything apart from the date. So I've got high hopes on this, but
I don't doubt that they've built one. Absolutely no doubt about that. I don't doubt that they're really working on Mac OS on an A7 chip. No doubt about that. This is not based on inside information I have, but this is just perfect sense that they're going to go for this. When I look at what Apple's trying to do, it doesn't make much sense to me that they would make a hybrid device that runs desktop and iOS apps at the same time. That just does not seem like a solution that Apple would go for. I do, and this is sort of anticipating a column that's probably going to be running in the next 3 or 4 days in the Sun Times. I really do honestly think that Apple has redefined their good, better, best for computers, where it used to be good as the MacBook Air, better is the MacBook Pro, best is the MacBook Pro with Retina. I think it's best is MacBook Pro with Retina, better is MacBook Air, and now the iPad Air is the good of real computers. It's not the best.
Yeah.
What I think is going to happen is that I'm very, very sure that that's what Apple is doing. There's a lot of other basis for that, but the rest, what I'm about to say is conjecture. I believe that they're going to retain the iPad Air nomenclature for something better than a 10-inch iPad. I believe that I would guess that it was going. It would be a 13-inch touchscreen display device that has an integrated SD, has the ability to run more than one iOS app side by side, has other features that make it more credible as a good regular computer that you can take away and use for an entire week, and they would retain the full-sized iPad as simply the best iPad that they make. I don't, but again, I think that this is the way that they're going to. Because I think this is the way that 5 years from now they're mainly going to be their main computing line is going to be an iOS touchscreen line and not a Mac line. They're going to want to wait for the users and the consumers to get there with them, but they want to start laying the groundwork right now. But again, I believe that they're going to be all in on iOS. I don't believe that they're going to do a hybrid iOS macOS device.
Anyone else? Carl?
I can definitely see them having a bigger screen coming along. 12.9. There's a lot of rumors about a 12.9 screen being developed. Sorry. With some Korean paper early in last week, I think. I just had to run downstairs. That's why I'm out of breath. No, I can see, because I think there is a demand for a larger iPad. I don't see about that cross-pollinization of the OSs, though.
Well, the only thing I'm thinking with that is that they've gone to a 60... Kelly's in. They've gone to a 64 gigabit 64-bit chip.
CPU, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the two OSs are aligned in a certain regard, and if you look at the back-end programming, it's only a Cocoa front-end change, isn't it, to make this work. It's not difficult.
But isn't there a difference between running on ARM and running on Intel?
Yes, but that I don't believe that would be a very, very complicated trick. When Apple built OS X, I'm not talking about OS X or Mac OS or iOS, I'm talking about OS X. From the very, very beginning, when they had their first set of briefings about this is going to be the future of our desktop operating system strategy, one of the bullet items things that they were talking about is that we are designing this to be CPU agnostic, so that if we ever want to switch from one CPU platform to another, there is a lot of work to be done to support the new CPU, but from the CPU level on upward, we don't need to make any changes whatsoever. So anytime there's if the thought ever occurs to me when I'm thinking about a possibility or a rumor that, gosh, it's going to be really, really difficult to swap CPUs, I always remember that, and also not only remember that that's a feature of OS X, but also that this apparently is a core philosophy of Apple, that we are not going to be afraid to switch CPUs when our strategy requires a different CPU family.
I've spoken to a couple of developers, and the ones that I trust to give me a decent answer have all said it would be very easy to have an application be a smart switch, so it knew what device it was on, and it would go to a touch-based interface for one function and then go back to a mouse-based interface for another function. It would be extremely easy. And yeah. I've said, as soon as the 5S was announced, I said, if they've gone to 64-bit architecture across the board, that means that they've got that cross-pollination between the two OSs, and it would be very easy to do. And I got shouted down at the launch of 5S, but more and more and more, there's conversations around it wouldn't be that hard. And people are saying about because the touch interface for Windows 8 is great on a tablet, and it's horrible on a desktop, and any application that's desktop-oriented is horrible on the Surface. But it would not be hard to, you know, Pages has got a changed interface there. You could switch between the two, so when you connected a desktop, you know, keyboard and a mouse, then it would change the way. And there's someone in the chat who's just made a point, and this is a great point. What about if this is not an iPad Air expanding the line? This is actually going to see the Air, MacBook Air, off. The MacBook Air will go, and you'll just have a pad, and you can carry around an extra keyboard and mouse if you want to.
I don't see that happening.
Well, it's an interesting one.
It's definitely an interesting point, and as always, I have to preface this by I don't see that happening, as opposed to I don't think that's definitely a crazy idea. I just don't think that the world is there yet. I think that they definitely have mentally they have a difference between this is a device that has a trackpad and a keyboard. This is a real computer that I can use to get my daily work done on.
Yeah.
This is a device that does not have a keyboard. Yes, I can buy one, but this does not have a keyboard on it. Therefore, I'm not going to think of this as a daily productivity device. And it also seems unnecessary. They have there are so many things that right now iOS is terrible at. If you want to use it as your day-to-day computer, getting a file into it, getting a file off of it,
yeah,
really, really crazy, stupid, difficult. They're going to have to solve multitasking at minimum, make it easy to, if you have a keyboard attached, switch between apps. Ideally, a way to have two apps running side by side. I think that to get...
That's essential,
And also realize that on the Windows side, Ultrabooks are everything that every company wants to make, and it's everything that everybody wants to buy. So I think that if they were to delete the MacBook Air, they would be essentially giving up a successful product that is very much on trend for the consumer market, without having anything to replace it immediately. I think that certainly the idea of the MacBook, the full size MacBook, is not dead. But in 5 or 10 years from now, when we look at Mac OS devices Mac OS lines get discontinued, I do think the MacBook Pro is going to be one of the first to go. Because Apple's going to be making the case that, well, look, we have great, we no longer need to have a pro designation because all of our computers now have Retina displays. All of our computers have really great performance. All of our computers can have a really high speed bus. You can attach whatever you want. So we're not going to keep making something called the Pro anymore. Now there's just the MacBook Air.
There's a point from just quickly that Windrider's made in the chat room. Do you remember the transition from PowerPC to Intel? But that is not the same from what I understand from talking to devs. They're saying that the architecture was different there. That's the whole point. Whereas now there is a more unifying elements to the architecture, even if it's not identical. Hello, Kelly. How are you doing, mate?
Better now.
I thought you weren't coming in. Sorry.
Well, I rolled out and saw Twitter and went, oh, hey, I guess I should show up.
Yeah, that'd be great. No worries. We're talking about a 12.9-inch iPad Pro and whether it's possible or not, whether it's coming or not. I've got to say, based on you're on your iPhone 5S, I'm going to make it mandatory for everyone to just come in on their iPhone from now on.
Okay.
It looks better than everything else.
So a lot of people just sort of like, this is going to be your video for the next 2 hours.
Wobble vision, yeah.
We'll start doing our arm weight exercises so we can actually do that.
Greeny, any thoughts on an iPad Pro, dude?
I hadn't really thought about it. It's
Would you like a 13-inch pad?
Well, I struggle to see where it fits in. Yeah, I don't know why you would want one, I suppose. But I suppose in some way, I don't know. Imagine you've got Logic or something like that, or Final Cut Pro, and you could run that on this touchscreen device. A bit of a pain in the arse, wouldn't it, really? I mean, you want to connect a keyboard, a mouse, and a decent-sized screen because of the intricacy of the UI in Pro apps. So, or Photoshop or something else like that. So, I don't know, from a physical point of view, I can't see what advantages it's got. You know, yeah, okay, you could record a song on the train or cut your FCP video on the train or something like that. And it would make it easier to use. But I don't know. I can't see having a future other than almost like a PR stunt, if anything. Just, I mean, the differences between an Android tablet and a Windows tablet, well, I suppose a Windows tablet as well, and an Apple tablet, it's very, very small now, and so maybe they're looking for the next big thing. You know. That's what I think, anyway.
Hardware-wise, there isn't a whole lot of difference, but software-wise, if you want a mini tablet, I think you have a very, very you have a lot of options available to you, whether it's Android or Mac or iOS. If you want something that can really behave like a functional, productive 10-inch tablet, though, the software is only there for iOS right now.
Mm.
I don't know. I've got my my Sony Xperia Z. Is it Z1 or something? Tablet.
Good phone.
The tablet. It's a big bastard as well.
Yeah.
I think that's about 10-inch. And that does pretty much. You know, that's got.
And it's got the external camera that you can buy, the X100 and X10, isn't it?
As well. Is it?
Yeah, this thing. It's got that thing that you can buy for it, and it just automatically links via NFC.
Yeah, you know, Android, it's a lot more of an open an open platform that that's not sort of restricted in the same way that Apple restricts iOS. And there's,
yep.
I think, an Android tablet really would give a professional who wants to use it almost like a professional mobile device would do better with an Android device. And maybe that's why Apple aren't thinking about introducing it.
There's an awful lot of people spending a lot more time commuting as well, which is, I mean, it's interesting that one of my clients spends an awful lot of time stood on the tube writing slides for presentations and so on, and, you know, two thumbs typing away on the iPad. At 13 inches, that's going to be way too big to be able to type with your hands. I think that's the trouble.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions is, I think that people are more naturally inclined towards the smaller 7 or 8 inch tablets. I think that's one of the reasons why when Android smaller tablets hit, those are the first Android tablets that were really able to compete with,
got proper traction
with the iPad. Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's very much a different beast. I think that Apple needs to do something with the full-sized iPad to keep it relevant, because they've never broken out sales on specific device. They just tell you how many iPads total that they sold. I do believe, from what I've seen, that the default iPad is becoming the iPad Mini, and that the full-sized iPad is now the one that people who come in might look at both and suddenly decide, oh, maybe I don't want the Mini, maybe I want the iPad. I think the iPad is kind of like the iPad Pro now. I mean, you walk in, the MacBook Air is almost guaranteed to be the appropriate computer for you. But some people are going to be better with a Mac Pro. I think that the full-sized iPad is the same thing there. So people are using these smaller tablets for different things. They're using larger tablets for. So I think that it's very, very smart to redefine this larger tablet as, here are things you can do with the larger one that you can't do with the smaller. And just to button this up, I'm sorry. I know that I'm really keen on this topic, so I tend to talk a lot about it.
No worries.
The last thing about it is that people have not really defined for themselves what these tablets are for, and so when they see a smaller tablet, they think that this is something that is manifestly not something I can do things that I use for my laptop. This is for something I can actually stick in a back pocket or stick in a coat pocket. The full sized iPad is still, I've got to find a place to put this. I got to find a bag for this. It's really light and thin, but it's still too big for, unless you've got nerd pockets like I do. You still have to carry it in some place. So I think that Apple and Android makers still have to find a way to explain to people, here's why a consumer would want to buy a 10-inch tablet instead of a smaller one, and they haven't really cracked it yet.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen is that people are going to end up with, like, somebody who goes in to buy a tablet, their default is sort of the Mini, like Andy was saying. Hi, Andy. And then the other thing that I think is going to happen is people who go in who are, like my parents and, like, the people that we've talked about here on the show, where if you're realistic about what it is that you're using and you go into an Apple store and you want to buy, you thought maybe you wanted a new laptop, you could end up with the full-size iPad as opposed to the Mini. So it sort of depends on what your goal is when you go in, and that's going to influence your decision-making, I think. I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, have decided that the size sort of makes a difference. Like, I need a more powerful something to replace a laptop. So obviously you need a full-size iPad. And if you're looking to, I have a Kindle Fire, but I don't like it as well as I like my phone, then you're probably going to go with the Mini.
Yeah. We shall see. I'm not convinced, but I got to say, the person that gave me the information is very reliable. So I think there could be something in that form factor. That's what it does and how it functions may be the big question.
Yeah, I'm with you on the form, on the size. I'm not sure on the idea of Mac, a hybrid device. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, right. The only thing I'd say is the unification of the 64-bit architecture. Belts in the chat room says a 12.9-inch MacBook Air would be interesting. I don't get that. Because I think there is one. Well, nearly.
That'd be a very Samsung product. Where maybe there are some people for which the 13-inch MacBook Air is just a tiny bit too large. Let's make a 12.5 or 12.7. Oh, we need some metric ones too.
I've got cargo pants with large pockets that fit my 7-inch Nook tablet, says Bookery. And Longball says his iPad fits in his Scotty vest.
Ooh. Yep. Actually, if you're listening live today, the day after American Thanksgiving, 511tactical.com makes like the best. I love their tactical pants. I have like almost every pair of pants
you're
I own is
one
of their tactical pants.
That.
No, I'm not. They did send me some free pants and a flashlight like
See?
4 years ago.
See?
But
4 years. Like, yeah. 4 years still counts.
4 years ago, and I go through pants. So don't worry. It's not like a lifetime supply of pants. But they're on their website, 25% off everything in the store. So load up on more pants.
You're trying to restock, aren't you?
I do. And I should say that that's one of the one of the first things I tried with the iPad Air that fits in the back pocket of my 511 tactical pants perfectly fine.
But what do you do when you sit down? It's like the iPad Air with curved screen.
I've got empires to forge. That's not time for sitting.
Oh, good man. Windrider also says in the chat room that Android's insistence on relying on a file structure pisses him off. Makes the OS a lot harder to use.
I'm curious why.
There you go. You two can have a dialogue. DM each other.
Okay. It's like, because as a matter of fact, it's the lack of, there 90% of the time I don't notice that iOS does not give you direct access to the file system. That other 10% though really cheeses me off. And you all know that, like, I switched to Android earlier this year. Mm. And there are many times during the week when my decision is validated. And often it's when I'm out and about. Someone has recommended it on Twitter, like, here's a podcast episode, or here's like a movie or a music file. I want to listen to it on my hour drive home from the city. It's so easy. Simply, I'll tap this link, download it, and then I can simply play that file or do whatever I want to do with it. Or if I want to transfer a file from one place to another, easy to do because I have access to the file system. Whereas on iOS, it's, okay, I have to find an app that can deal with that URL, and I have to make sure that I can transfer it into an app that can, like, you know, a flash drive style app that can use the built-in media player to play files. And that's just, I don't know, to me, there's so many times when it's so much more complicated than it needs to be, and it's not giving me a benefit of not being able to see the file system.
Bronwyn says, there's a lot of files I'd like to delete off my iPad, but not having access to them really annoys the hell out of me. Good point. What else has happened this week? Well, Angry Birds Go was released, which is a go-kart game. And in New Zealand, where they were playing it, someone has come up with a microtransaction for £70 for one of the cars with an energy system. It's 124 New Zealand dollars, and that's £69.99 and $99.9 if you're American. The report shows that when you drive your car, you run out of energy, so you have to recharge it with coins and gems and that kind of stuff. And I've had a rant about Clumsy Ninja this week, because apart from the physics being quite cute, it's crap as a game. It's just so boring and instructional. It drove me mad. And now I've given it access to notification. It's gone from being something that was just crap to being hugely friggin' annoying. Mm-hmm. I need it off my iPad as fast as possible. In-app purchases, I mean, I don't want to go on too long about this because we talked about it a few weeks back, but surely it's time for Apple to think about some regulation of in-app purchasing, because £70. If your game is worth that amount of money, have the balls to charge that.
Yeah,
and let the market forces decide. But don't put stuff in where kids can buy it, because the parents are not savvy enough to close down the iPad to make sure that you can't have in-app purchases.
So I'm torn on this, because I don't think it should be Apple. We shouldn't be buying the damn things, and we teach the app developers that way, rather than having a blanket ban come down like a nanny state type thing.
Well, I mean, there's nanny state, and then there's cynical exploitation of the bad parts of the human operating system.
Bearing in mind that the libel laws are different in the UK from the US, Andy, carry on.
That's fine. It's like, you could also make a lot of money by, you know, I'm going to set up a liquor store right next to the spot where I know that a lot of AA meetings get held, and I'm going to make sure that on the days when they meet, you can buy those little nip bottles for like 18 cents, because I know they'll be back for a case of beer like the next day.
Dude, you're wasted in journalism.
I'm wasted generally, but in journalism too.
All I mean is I don't ever like the idea of one company just enforcing the will. I know this is wrong, but we've allowed this to get to this situation. By when the app started coming out, we go, oh my god, they want $4.4 for this app. They want $6 for this app. How dare they ask so much money?
Yeah.
So they went down this freemium route, and of course, this is where it's now led us to. But who's buying these things? I mean, you can say, okay, maybe the poor one or two parents get caught out, but God, there can't be that many, surely, that are actually falling for this or willingly, you know, paying the money. That's insane.
I can't believe that either.
But that's worth so much. When Apple talks about how much money they're paid out to developers at every single media event, they don't talk about how much of that is in-app purchases. And it's not that there are tens of thousands of developers who are making a fortune off of the App Store. It's a small handful of top 10 developers that are mostly making their money off of in-app purchasing. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if we as a culture of consumers were to stop making a fuss when a brilliant app, God forbid, costs $5, and when the first 100 comments are one star, this should be free. Yeah, we're creating our own problem. Apple contributes to the problem slightly by creating a system which makes it impossible for someone to sample an app before they actually buy it. You really are either all in or all out. This is another thing that I like about Android, where it's possible. Most apps that cost money, there is a free version that costs nothing that maybe will have ads, and traditionally will have premium features turned off. But then for $5, you can buy a little micro app that is the unlocker for all those extra features, and so it really allows you to live inside that app for a couple weeks, and then then you're actually kind of grateful. You think, gee, I balked at the $10 price tag, but damn, this email client, it really is worth $10. Here, take my money.
I think that's the thing is, if you said, I've said this right away, if you think your app's worth this, then charge that. But that's not to say you can't let a balked version of it, the 30-day trial version that can play on its own, and then you have to make an in-app purchase. But when you make that in-app purchase is for the program. Mm-hmm. Whereas the thing you've got with these little energy pills and that kind of stuff is, They are a constant stream of income for the developer, and I don't mind that if it was 59 cents or 99 cents, and it gave you another week's gameplay or something like that. But without the in-app purchase, I get 5 minutes on Clumsy Ninja now. Now I didn't pay anything for it to start, and I only got 20 minutes to start with it. But I've got to make an in-app purchase, and then that in-app purchase, I don't know how long it gets me, but there's a diamond mine that I can buy, or a gem mine, that's £21. And I'm thinking, well, look, if I know that when I open that gem mine up, that's all the gems I'll ever need, then yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I might pay that if I thought it was a better game than it currently is. But I don't know whether that gem mine really is all I'll ever need forever. And that's what it should be. You know, if there's an in-app purchase, don't have the problem with the in-app purchase, as long as it says, right, here's the amount that gets you X hours of gameplay, and here's the amount that gets you unlimited hours of gameplay or something. But
I'm just looking in the top chart section on the iPad here, and it's top grossing. 9 of the top 10 are freemium games.
And they're not very good ones either. What would they be, by the way?
The top one is Candy Crush, Clash of the Titans, Game of War, Modern Warfare, Heyday, Simpsons, Pet Rescue Saga, Kingdom Age, and The Sims.
Modern Warfare is not freemium, is it?
Well, it says it's free, and it's in the top grossing list, so there must be some in-app purchase in there somewhere.
It's not bad for a free game, is it?
No. I should correct myself. I was thinking mostly of the I wasn't thinking immediately of the sort of apps where it really is designed to create a constant revenue stream. There, it's not just the it's not just games too. There are a lot of commercial apps like photo apps where every month and a half they come up with a new filter pack or a new feature.
But at least you know what you're getting when you buy that.
Exactly. But it also brings up another thing that degrades the experience. I don't like the fact that this app is going to be pestering me every 2.5 to 3 weeks to buy something else. And it's not a case where I really wish I could crop to 16:9:9 format, and then I'll go to the store section of this app and buy this as an in-app purchase. It's I just want to take a picture and suddenly there's a pop-up. Did you know that now we can do 16:9 cropping? Only 99 cents in-app purchase. Buy now. I just wanted to take a picture of this lovely duck walking into a pond, and now you're trying to sell me something. Please go away. Stop panhandling me. You're the number 4 paid app in the entire app store. You're making more money than I am. You don't need to panhandle me.
Oh, that pisses me off when I pay for something and then there's in-app purchases.
So do we think there's any way that we can, as consumers, protest this other than not buying it?
We need an e-petition. Apple needs an e-petition system. And if it gets to 10,000 petition votes, then they have to have a board meeting on it.
That'd be good.
No?
Okay. No, I'd go for that.
I think that part of it is, and this is where it gets tricky, is part of it would be not buying the in-app purchases, obviously. But then the second piece of it is maybe just not picking up the app at all, because it's still counted as a sale, even if there isn't any money. And that's where the popular rankings and that sort of stuff comes from. So it's entirely possible that if it turns out like what was the racing game where you had to buy in
real racing,
real racing.
Virtually all of them now, actually.
Yeah, well, there was one initially, and I never picked it up. I like racing games, but I never picked it up at all, even though it was free, because I had already been warned off of it by people who were super excited about them. I like them. They're really, really like them. And they said, no, don't do it, because this is their system for making money off of it, and that's crap. And I agreed, and so I went with that. And I think on the flip side, I think it would be interesting to see what happened if developers did something like you could buy a $5 version of Candy Crush and you could just play until you were done playing instead of having to go pester people on Facebook. And I wonder how that would work, because I would give $5 not to have to do that. And in fact, I quit playing Candy Crush when it was like, you need to get to this next level and you're going to have to ask people for it. And that's going to be super easy. Or you could do this other thing that's going to take like longer time. And I was like, I'm not going to pester people. So I didn't. And there's a number of games that are sort of that way. And I almost find the go hassle your Facebook friends more egregious in some ways, just because now you're making me an advertiser instead of just advertising to me. And I think that that's kind of a crap move as well. So, and I understand that apparently I'm some sort of weird exception in yet another case where I would give money for a decent game. If a game is fun, I would pay for it. If an app is useful, I will pay for it. And
do you remember Sorry, Kelly. I'm just thinking, I picked up on Modern War, which which Carl got there, and I was thinking Modern Warfare, which it's not. It's Modern War. Now this thing has got the graphics capability. Do you remember the Apache Desert Strike game, like the 3D isometric view, and the controls were really hard to work out because you go left, right, and to go diagonally was just impossible. That's the graphic quality in this thing. A vault of gold is £70.
This is the problem. They all
and without the gold, you can't play the game.
And yeah, how much is an Xbox One game? £50?
Yeah, that's what I mean. This thing's got this.
At least
you look at the amount of money that's gone into Call of Duty Ghosts, and you can buy that for £42. And that's significantly greater, or Rise, or something like that, on the Xbox One.
I do like Kelly's idea, though. I mean, if I had a buy option that simply said...
Absolutely.
That was at least as honest to say the cut the bull option, say, look, or just give us $15 and we will sell you everything that we plan to sell you in the next year.
Yeah.
We will make this... We will for the nostalgia for people 30 years and older who are trained to buy apps in a shrink wrap box inside a store. We will give you the pretend CD-ROM version of this game that has everything and is playable.
Hmm.
And of course, the other thing, like most iOS games, they're fleeting. You play them for a week, maybe, and then they're gone.
Yeah,
that's the other annoying thing.
I just can't. Maybe it's a cultural or generational thing. But even with the console games, and the production values are awesome, and I know how much money goes into developing these games. When you're trying to get like $75 out of me for a game, I'm thinking, gee, I'm going to enjoy this for a week, maybe two, and then I'll put it away and never play it again. And mm-hmm. am I going to get, unlike if I buy like three movies on Blu-ray or a Blu-ray box set, which at least for me, I will enjoy the hell out of it for a month, put it away, and then keep dipping into it for the rest of my life. I just can't justify $75 with that. I'll spend it for live entertainment. I'll spend it to see a play or something, but gee.
I dream of a week's worth of use. This has still got the plastic on it. I haven't opened it. There's games in here. I've got Modern Warfare 3. It's in here somewhere. I haven't even taken out the plastic yet. Sorry, Greeny, go ahead, mate.
I was going to say, I do think it depends on money and time, as it were. Like back in the day when you were a teenager or something like that, I remember playing Monkey Island for week after week after week, even month after month. Mm. Mainly because I couldn't afford to buy another game, and you had to play it. And as you get older, you've got that sort of might have a bit more cash, and also some of the prices of the games have gone down. It's same in music, isn't it? When you've only got a few albums, you listen to the one album loads and loads of times because you haven't got that much to choose from, as it were. But now prices have gone down, and music and games are cheaper, and we've got more money. It's not almost like the emotional commitment into the game has gone. So easy to download a game on your iPhone or on
Impulse,
your Mac.
Impulse, right. Go ahead.
In the old days, you would hear about an album coming out, you would read the reviews, you would go to the record store, you would buy it, and you know it was like a most religious event when you put it down. And the same with the game, it would come out, you go to the software shop, you buy it, and come back and... And, you know, the old Infocom stuff where you looked at all the what do they call it, the feelies and all that inside there. There's a lot more emotional commitment into the game than there is today. And I think that's the main difference.
Yeah.
I blame Farm Phil.
Well, interestingly, one of the games that I've got on the Xbox, which I think is extremely good value, is Hitman. The last Hitman that came out... if you play that on the easiest setting, you can run through the whole game, shoot everybody, and finish every mission and finish the entire thing and see the story. But actually, if you want to go through without being detected on the harder settings as you go along, it gets an awful lot more different in terms of the gameplay. So actually what you're getting is you can have a shoot 'em up or you can have a sneak 'em up. It's up to you. And I played that through on the easiest setting and thought, well, this is a bit easy. And I know Paul Wheatley thought the same thing. But actually, when you turn it up, just even one notch, all of a sudden, that becomes impossible. So you have to start getting a bit more judicious about the way you think about going through each mission. And on the hardest level, the killer level, I mean, I'm not even close to that. But effectively, I've got five, because there's five levels, I've got five games there that I can go and play through, which reinforces what you're saying, Greg, about having those weeks and weeks and weeks of play, if you've got the time, which that's what evades me at the minute.
when you were a teenager, you did have the time, didn't you?
Yeah. Then I found girls, and then I didn't have time anymore.
Oh, I never got to the girl bit when I was a teenager.
You still haven't, mate.
They kept running away from me.
Yeah, but that's because they thought you were Hagrid. Apple have patented successfully a Lytro camera. Light field technology camera. Now, I don't think there's anything associated with Lytro here. Apple has been awarded a patent by the US Patent Trademark Office for digital camera, including refocusable image mode adapter, with the document also discussing the potential use of similar camera systems in devices like an iPhone. Yeah. I mean, this is interesting. I've had a thought about why this was possible, but
I mean, we talked about this possibility back on the photo show when I used to host it, and Lytro brought out their camera, and I said, so is there any chance this can be put into an iPhone, for example, and everyone said, yeah, absolutely. Just software, really.
Mm. I just it's interesting though. I think that it's more interesting to get the sort of light field camera effects with software and a better CPU than with an actual like lens array. I think I just got the new update to Nokia's camera apps. I have this really cool feature that if you don't use the buzzwords the labels they're using for it, essentially what it does is it does focus bracketing. So in this special mode, it will actually take several shots very quickly with several focus points, and then simply store those as a package and whatever you want to do with it later. Like if you want to change the focus point later, you can do that. The really cool thing, though, is a feature that simply says everything in focus, because with the mechanics of the lens on these tiny, tiny little cameras, you can get if you're taking a picture of somebody who's kind of close to the camera, anything that's way in the past, way in the deep field is probably going to be out of focus. With this focus bracketing, it will take a focused version of the background, a focused version of the foreground, a focused version of the car in the middle, and basically assemble all these components to a single one with completely beautiful, like deep focus. And I think that the iPhone 5S with the A7 processor and that 10 frame per second shooting mode is, and also the graphics engine that's inside there that can do an HD, that can build an HDR image without ghosting moving objects in it. I think that's the sort of feature that Apple would want to do. They don't want to be able to say we have a light field camera array inside our phone. They want to be able to say, finally, you can have the option of putting everything in focus at once, or deciding later on what you want to have in focus. And however they manage to make that happen, no user is going to care about it as long as it happens well. They pull a lot of things. It's really, really interesting, but I don't think that's how they would do that.
Does it result in a massive file, though?
I don't know. I don't. Lytro is really curious. It had this sort of story arc that I've seen before, where they're very, very interested in getting me hardware, and then suddenly they're very, very not interested in getting me hardware. It's not like like Pebble, where they wanted to send hardware out to all their Kickstarter backers first, and I had to wait like several months to get one to test out with. This was, oh, that's great, no, perfectly fine, we'll set you up an interview with this guy, and then like 2 weeks later when I follow up, nothing. And they don't have units available, and they don't want to talk to anyone about it, which seems to me to think that if their goal was to simply get investors from elsewhere, or to get bought, or have their technology bought by another company, maybe that's what happened. Or they proved that this really they were committed to produce this hardware because of reasons. And after they establish that, yeah, this is not a business model, we have to shut down the company. We'll keep it alive for the IT, but we're not for the IP, but we're not going to keep doing it. So that's why I don't think anybody has figured out a way to do light field image processing that justifies the need to have this entirely new sensor system, this entire new lens system. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, my thought about how they could do this was the fact that you can't have a patent for focusing light on a medium. It's how you focus that light on the medium that would be the question. Yeah. And I think if they've got this methodology of changing how to focus the light on multiple sensors at once, that's patentable. But I can't think that even Lytra have got a patent that would cover just focusing of light onto a medium.
Yeah.
Someone's probably got that somewhere and trolling for it later on, maybe. I don't know.
Just to clarify, because I'm not a photographer, but I did read something about one of these cameras. It might be the wrong one. It's the idea that you can take a picture, and after you've taken the picture, you can focus on a different area of the photo or whatever between near and... Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The depth of field is variable in software.
You can also do cool image style effects where if you've decided that you want to put the focus on this one area but not others, or if you want to show movement without having a simple like motion blur, you can do a lot of cool things. There's actually an iPhone app that...
You have to hold the image very, very... You have to hold the iPhone very, very still, and effectively you've got two pictures and it moves between the two.
It's interesting. Yeah. I wish I don't have my iPhone in front of me, so I can't find it. I'm going to see if I can find it on the App Store, because it really is worth downloading. It was a image researcher who's done a lot of work in light field technology, wrote this app for the iPhone just as a demonstration of this sort of principles. where the way that this app works is that you don't simply click the shutter and take a picture. You basically you're holding the phone like this on the live screen. There you can choose 1, 2, 3, or 4 points that you're telling the app these points on this image are interesting to me. And then it's not actually taking a full 8-megapixel image. It is actually taking a high definition video. And the more that you, the longer you spend holding the camera, the more you're like moving the camera around. And it is basically building a synthetic image with the idea that I'm supposed to stabilize these parts of the image. I don't care about what happens to the rest of it. And you wind up with these really interesting synthetic effects where it's not quite a photo, not quite artwork, because if your friend was keeping relatively still for the quarter second or the half second, he's in sharp focus, but everything else is a little bit like sort of swimmy around him. You have to be
very still for that to work well, though. That was the one thing that I found with it. It works better off a tripod-y type mount, like a GIF or something like that, than it did handheld.
Well, actually, I mean, on a tripod, it was less interesting than, again, having that little, like, I'm not trying to move the camera around, but, of course, it's going to move a little bit.
Yeah.
That creates interesting effects. I think we started to hit the limits of what people are willing to pay for in terms of image quality, where the iPhone 5S camera is great. It is almost best in class. The Nokia Lumia 1020 camera is probably the best, but doesn't always take the best pictures. But I think that both of those cameras have now slightly exceeded what people care about in terms of raw image quality. I think the next interesting step is when these camera apps, the operating systems and the built-in camera apps, know that people are interested in solving problems and creating interesting pictures. And it's going to be more about, let's create synthetic images that sort of fake these real cool big camera things that people want, or even things that are unnatural but interesting. We're already seeing that with the 5S, the way that it does when you're in low light mode, the way that it combines four pictures into one. We're seeing it in the panorama mode, where it's not simply taking panorama, it's also analyzing the image and recognizing that, okay, this is sort of a duplicated, there's movement inside this image, this person is moving from left to right, so we're going to be smart about how we fuse these images together. I think that the next really great camera app is going to do more things like that, as opposed to more megapixels, as opposed to better flash, stuff like that.
Well, of course, Google did a huge leap forward with sensing motion in images with the last update that they did at the I/O thing, didn't they, with Google Plus?
Yeah.
That ability to extract people or move people around inside an image when they noticed it.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a brilliant move where... By using Google Plus as like the sort of the center concierge for mobile images, they took a lot of the heavy lifting off of not only the phone software, but also the camera hardware inside the phone. They simply say, so long as your phone can take an 80% good picture, and so long as you click that option that has it automatically added to your Google Plus library, we have great service. We have servers that are really powerful, and we've bought really great image processing and image enhancement algorithms. So by the one microsecond after it lands on our server, we will build a version of that picture that looks like it was shot with the best camera in the world. And then you have that photo available to you to share on Twitter, to post to Instagram, to download and print, and that sort of stuff. So I do obsessively test out the cameras when these phones come in, but it's starting to look like that's becoming slightly irrelevant because they're finding ways around the limitations of these tiny, tiny little phone camera things.
I've changed my mind about everyone coming in on their iPhone next week. You're all right, Kel?
I don't know what happened.
Well, there you go. That's why. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They've got loads of Christmas deals on at the moment. You can still shed loads of money off using our offer codes. And there was a tweet out today from Dan on Twitter, and he said, if I'd have listened to you and Rankin and changed all my websites over to UK2 when they suggested it, I'd have saved myself £1,000 by now. So there you go. Check out UK2. They're absolutely brilliant. They support this podcast. They are the supporter of the network. They pick up all our bandwidth. And we love them to bits. So please, please, please check them out. Go through our website, use our offer codes, and we get the kudos then. Otherwise, we don't. So please, please, please use it. Even if you just want to log into your account or something, go for it. Right. Have we got a cool thing, Monsieur Madden?
Well, my cool thing was going to be Bioshock Infinite because it was like going £14 earlier today, but I've just noticed it's now gone back up to £27.99.
Bastards.
Maybe you don't want to pick that one.
I picked Bioshock and played it at your behest a few weeks ago. I downloaded it and had a go with it, and I enjoyed it. It was okay. It's a bit of a linear shoot 'em up, and you have to go the right routes and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I prefer roam anywhere things, but it was okay, and it was it was only £4 or something.
Exactly. You might like my alternative pick then, because Borderlands 2 is still at a special price of $10.49 on the App Store for the Mac.
Excellent. Windrider says...
Why do I want to play Borderlands 2?
Because I hear it's a really good game. I've downloaded it, but I've not had time to actually play it yet. But I've seen other people playing it on demos and stuff, and it looks like a sort of free-roaming adventure shoot-em-up thing. And there's loads of... There's some in-app purchases, but they're all missions, so they don't actually impact on the actual playing of the game, thank God. But for $10.49, I mean, that's reduced as well, so maybe by the time this gets posted, it might be back up to its normal price.
Okay, good pick, mate. Good pick.
Okay.
Monsieur Natko, what do you have for us?
I will give you a whole book full of cool things. This is the... I'm selling this in front of the camera. This is the Cool Tools book. If you might be familiar with Kevin Kelly's really great blog of the same name, Cool Tools, you can access it by kk.org, I think. But this the Cool Tool blogs is nothing but like people recommending things that work great, and so he has built these recommendations to a huge book, so fun to browse, of nothing but services and techniques and products and things that you never knew existed, but then you find out that, oh, maybe I should have like a spool of parachute cord in the house because this guy just wrote 800 words explaining why it's the best rope ever. It's not the sort of thing where you're going to, it's really hard to demonstrate this because I'm flipping through it trying to find one example, but then I find myself just simply reading it. So here's a page 316, 317, a theater and backstage. So here is one page recommending this book on how to make props and models that really explains, also has tips on model making. Here's the facing page is like a book about acting. There's like tools, there's food, there's like how to buy a farm. Here's if you're camping, here's a tent that you can, there you go. Here's Eric Sloan's weather book. So here's a book about how weather works. I want to buy that too. It reminds us why books are in many ways cooler than the internet.
That's good.
Because this is just a big pile worth of things that people think are worth recommending, covering pretty much every topic you can imagine. The best recommendation I can give for it is that it's going to be released very shortly. You can order it on Amazon. It's $40, not a cheap book, but a very valuable one. But I got they sent me a pre-release copy. And, you know, this is I come home from errands or a trip, or I come downstairs my first like trip to the front step
from Cali.
My first trip to the front step, like in the day, and I'll see like whatever packages are there, and I'll sort of bring them inside and triage them a little bit. And this was like in an envelope. I didn't remember them asking to send it. So I opened it up. So, oh, that's the Cool Tools book. And start flipping through it, and 20 minutes later, 15, 20 minutes later, I'm still standing there on the front step in my pajamas. The door is still open, and I'm still reading it. So anyway, great, great book. It's also it's just full of the sort of things that if you buy some of the stuff inside here, a week, a month, a year from now, people will ask you, "Where did you get that? That's perfect."
It does look good.
Well, I'm a sophisticated who has sources, as opposed to no, you spent $40 for a really cool book. Cool tools.
Bronwyn in the chat room says she wants to know what Asda looks like for some reason. I've said it's Walmart without guns. There we go. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Mr. Green, what do you have?
Well, I'd like to go full circle in an almost magical and mystical way.
Show us the ring then, Greeny.
We started off at, like, I talked about my beautiful cube that I'm picking up on Sunday. And sort of halfway through this podcast, we talked about an old software. And my pick is the historical software collection. So we all know what greatworkarchive.org does. And They also host a load of retro software that you can download for free. But it's getting an emulator working, it can be a bit of a pain in the arse sometimes. And if you just want to see a program, you know, right there and then, it can sort of be an obstacle between you downloading it, getting it to work, and running it, getting the ROMs and the OS and everything else like that. So, cut a long story short, the Historical Software Collection is available for free at archive.org/details/historical-software.
Good man.
And the software curator has listed 61 items that you just click on from sort of historical software that run in the browser. So you don't have to install any emulator or anything. It's all done for you. And there's lots of Apple stuff there. There's like VisiCalc. There's WordStar that you can run all in the browser. The Hobbit, which runs on the ZX Spectrum. What else we got? Adventureland.
Hours may be wasted.
Lemonade Stand, which was copyright 1979, which came with a load of the Macs. I think it was the Apple II, wasn't it?
And
lots of other stuff. I think it's Elite as well. And you can run it all in the browser over at archive.org, doing a great job to preserve valuable history in software.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Kelly G.
I can never get out of the cellar with the barrels.
Kelly G, before your connection blows out once more.
I'm actually going to make a festive pick. Over at Mac Voices, Chuck Joyner is doing gift guides, and he's getting three guests at a time, and you do a few rounds with a variety of picks, and you can have all kinds of them. So he's doing several of them for Christmas gift ideas or end-of-year holiday festive gift ideas, whatever it is that you prefer. And I got to record one earlier this week, but there's a wide variety of people that he has on. So he has Gene McDonald, we love, Brett Terpstra, got Steve Sandy over from Tua, Michael Johnston from We Have Communicators. And there's a wide variety of folks who are there, and it's a really interesting way to find out a wide variety of stuff that you could use for gift ideas. And you can also get the sort of in-between stuff, because people talk about other things along the way. And so you can sort of like, you can take one of those original ideas and then run with it. And so that might be super helpful. And I think a lot of people are kind of at a point where most of the people that you need to buy gifts for are people who will go out and buy it for themselves if it's something that they really want. So this can really help give you some creative ideas in other ways. Maybe it's a cool stocking stuffer or a cool super high ticket gift, you know, if you've got that kind of cash to drop on somebody. So, and there's all kinds of stuff, everything in between. So it's, so far, they've all been really interesting. And, every episode so far, the first two are out, and I was on the third, which will come out next week. There's been at least a couple of things that were like, oh, this is awesome. I need one of these. And then let me figure out who else I need to buy one for.
Cool. Excellent. Good pick. Last but by no means least, I've got to give credit to Gazmaz for this bit, because last week on the big show, he suggested Jealous Skins for iPad. So
they're awesome.
I ordered one, and I ordered one for my Nokia 1020 as well. And they do. They do for all of the devices. And it came, it was a week to deliver from Canada, and this is the 5 a.m. pattern, which is absolutely beautiful. I love this. But there you go, front and back. And what's really cool is you can get the equivalent wallpaper that goes with it, and actually green screens rather nicely, to go with it too, for your iPad. They're $30 for the iPad, and I think it was $15 for the 1020. But what's really quite magical about these is if you pick them off and put them back on, they're not sticky, and you don't lose any stickiness. And you peel it off and put it back on. And you know, like when you get those screen protectors, you end up with bubbles everywhere and you're chasing them around with like a piece of tissue or something. Yeah. With these ones, if it just bubbles a little bit, and it doesn't really bubble that much, you just peel it back and peel it forwards again, and that's it. It's done. So you can have four or five attempts at getting these to stick on if you really need to. And there's some quite delicate alignment points on an iPad And I put that on in a couple of minutes, and it's absolutely beautiful as a finish. And it feels nice in the hands as well. Gives it a lot more grip and tactile fit. So that's my pick. Jealous Skins, absolutely brilliant. Love them to bits. The negative side of that was UPS are a bunch of thieving bastards. Because despite the fact I only paid $45 for the whole lot, so that's about 30 quid, they decided to pay the import duty for me. Thanks very much, guys. So that was 7 quid on top of that. And then they charged me £11 administration for doing it for me. You thieving tosspots. There we go.
But they look so cute in those shorts.
George,
no, the guy that delivered my iPad, I said, I can't believe the admin charge. He went, yeah, I know. He said, we're thieving bastards, aren't we? he was almost apologetic. Exactly. Where do you get a hold of your... I've forgotten your name. Carl.
You get a hold of me on Twitter at Clausio101 or on the new site at www.macandforth.com.
Mac and Forth. How's it going?
It's okay. I went through. I think I found all the typos that I didn't notice the first time around, but got them. But yeah, I've got to start adding content over the next few days and weeks now.
Good man. Well done. Mr. Anatko, where are you, sir? We can get the odd extra follow, I'm sure.
Well, let's see. If you can spell my last name, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Anatko on Twitter. You can also hit anatko.com, where I'm blog posts, Twitter. Yeah, I also link to the stuff that I'm writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, my regular column there. I'm also doing the Amazon musical advent calendar, which is an annual thing I do. Yay! Where every day I try to recommend a new piece of music. With no theme, just music that I like. It also links to the appropriate track on Amazon. There is an ulterior motive.
Pays your salary for the next 12 months.
No, it's not for the next 12 months. I have an Amazon Associates account that I don't use for tech stuff because I don't, you know, as a tech reporter, I can't recommend stuff and get a kickback for it. But music, I'm just a guy recommending music. And so I did this. When I started this a few years ago, I'd already been doing the advent calendar for a few years. I thought, okay, if I get 4 cents back on every 99-cent track that people actually buy, I might make 20. You know, I spend $30 or $40 on buying tracks to sample for this, so it'll work out okay. What I didn't know is that the Amazon Associate links work if you just click that link to get into Amazon, and then like during that session, you buy like a $2,000 like TV for your uncle. I get a kickback on the $2,000 TV. I didn't find that out until like 3 months later when I got the first deposit into like my gift account. So, oh, I now have a lot of Amazon gift credits now. It's like, you know that camera that I was looking at 6 weeks ago that I thought, no, it's a luxury. I don't want it. Well, guess what? You have enough money for that camera now. So that has left me very well motivated to keep the gift guide going. But before we go, this was just in the next room over.
So, I'll send you my address to send it.
Yeah, well, I'll send it by UPS. I'll make sure that the declared value is like $2,000, the original value.
Bastard.
But for people watching, this is what I was talking about. This is like the most awesome design ever. So if, when you want to get into it, you undo that, and then do that, and you have the awesome processing power of the, 65040? No, it's a power PC, but, you know. I wish Apple would make more computers. If the Mac Pro, if you could do that with a Mac Pro, I would find the $3,000 for a Mac Pro. I don't need a Mac Pro. I would never use the Mac Pro, but I would just like doing that every week or two, just to remind myself that occasionally I am a nerdly sort of person. But you also see where people found it very easy to turn this into a napkin dispenser because you're left with this gutted out.
Which is a crime. It's punishable by death. If anyone's got one of those, I would love one. I would gladly buy it off you.
Gorgeous, gorgeous object. It was one of the few like real. I wouldn't call it a failure, but it's there are times when I'm loaned a product from a certain company, and they really don't want it back, and so they say, well, if you want to keep it, here's the very, very tiny amount of money that we will take if you just keep it and don't make us forced to deal with it anymore. This is like the only time I think that Apple ever said that, yeah, you know what? I know we sent you that $1,500 computer, but if you send us, oh, I don't know, do you have any like Burger King coupon? That's all you got? Great, send us that. Keep it.
Don't make it worse.
That was the That was the easiest yes ever.
No, thank you.
It lasted a year, didn't it? It was out in 2000 and discontinued in 2001.
Yeah, it was. It didn't last long. That's for sure.
No. And if you think about all of the money, the R&D that went into that,
yeah,
and, you know, and all the promotion and everything else, there must have been millions and millions of dollars to create that. And I'm not too sure why they discontinued it. There does seem a bit of a mystery about why they would discontinue this. I know there wasn't that much of a gap between that and an iMac and that and a Mac Pro and all that sort of stuff. And
it got some early bad press for silly reasons, because this is, again, one of those classic Apple. No one's ever tried to mold our acrylic in these surfaces before, but I'm sure we can solve it. And so there were some seam lines that looked, on some models, look like cracks in the acrylic. That they weren't cracks, they were just seam lines. Mm. So that didn't kill the product, but it certainly didn't help convince people that you should really get this awesome, awesome machine. Also, as I recall, the new design iMac, like the really cool gooseneck iMac, came out shortly after this. And as cool as this one is, the gooseneck iMac was like,
yeah.
Let me buy me one of those.
I got one of these. I got one of those.
Spank me and put me to bed without supper. I want that one.
This one there.
All right.
And I've also got a 12-inch G4 notebook as well, thanks to Rich McCorriston.
There was an uncomfortable pause then for a few minutes, wasn't
there? Was there?
Yeah.
While I leant back and pointed at something. Greedy, where the hell are you?
I think we had images in our mind. You can find me at BritishMac.com, if you want to. Twitter is BritishMac. And my Google Plus page is Google.com, the symbol plus, British Mac Studios.
Any chance for show soon, or?
Say it again.
Any chance for show soon?
We've had one this year. Come on.
I'm hoping this weekend.
Break out a sweat.
Yeah, no, but I'm trying to get up to one a month. I'm hoping for one this weekend. Because the British Mac Meetup is coming up shortly, isn't it, Ewan?
It is, mate. When is that, Greeny?
That would be on the 21st of December at 7 o'clock at the studios. To find out more information, head over to BritishMac.com and click on the forum, which is the Pussycat Club, or all the details are on the google.com/plus/BritishMac. No, it's not. No, I've done one too many slashes there, haven't I?
Just type in British Mac into Google and it'll find it. Jesus Christ, Greeny.
What? Well, I had to get one in at the end.
Keep it simple. People are listening to this in the car. You're done. Right, Ms. Gamont, before you lose connection again, where are you, girl?
I'm still impressed that you asked Greeny where he was and he knew. sorry. It's a Christmas miracle. You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can also find me over on the Angry Mac Bastards podcast and the Two Law Talk cast, and you can find me doing the comic show on this very network.
Where Greeny thinks he is and where he actually is are two different things entirely as well, though, so be careful. We'll be back again next week with the Mac Show at 3:30 on Friday afternoon. Be there. Thanks for listening.